Chapter 41. Pitt had the Capricorn home in on the signal relay buoy as soon as the wind dropped to 20 knots. Once again, they connected the airline, running from the ship's compressor to the Titanic, and then waited for Sappho-2's emergence from the deep. The eastern sky was beginning to brighten when final preparations were made to receive the submersible. Divers made ready to drop in position around the Sappho-2 and secure safety lines to prevent her from capsizing in the heavy seas. The winches and cables were set to haul her from the water and into the open stern of the Capricorn. Down in the galley, the cook began making an urn of coffee and a hearty breakfast to greet the crew of the submersible when they arrived. When all was in readiness, the scientists and engineers stood quietly shivering in the early morning cold, wondering about Henry Monk's death. It was 06:10 when the submersible popped into the marching swells, 100 yards off the port stern of the Capricorn. A line was run out by boat, and within 20 minutes, the Sappho-2 was winched onto the stern ramp of her tender. As soon as she was blocked and secured into place, the hatch was opened, and Woodson pulled himself out, followed by the four surviving members of his crew. Woodson climbed to the top deck, where Pitt was waiting for him. His eyes were red with sleeplessness, and his face stubble-bearded and gray, but he managed a thin smile as Pitt shoved a steaming mug of coffee into his hand. "I don't know which I'm happier to see, you or the coffee," he said. "Your message mentioned murder," Pitt said, ignoring any word of greeting. Woodson sipped at the coffee for a moment and looked back at the men who were gently lifting Monk's body through the submersible's hatch. "Not here," he said quietly. Pitt motioned toward his quarters. Once the door was closed, he wasted no time. "Okay, let's have it." Woodson dropped heavily onto Pitt's bunk and rubbed his eyes. "Not much to tell. We were hovering about 60 feet above the sea floor, sealing off the starboard ports on sea deck, when I got your message about the TV camera. I went aft to check it out and found Monk lying on the deck with his left temple caved in." "Any sign of what caused the blow?" "As plain as the nose on Pinocchio's face," Woodson answered. "Bits of skin, blood, and hair were stuck on the corner of the alternator housing cover." "I'm not that familiar with the Sappho-2's equipment. How's it mounted?" "On the starboard side, about 10 feet from the stern. The housing cover is raised about 6 inches off the deck, so the alternator below is easily accessible for maintenance." "Then it might have been an accident. Monk could have stumbled and fallen, striking his head on the edge." "He could have, except his feet were facing the wrong way."
"What did his feet have to do with it?"
"They were pointing toward the stern."
"So?"
"Don't you get it?" Woodson said impatiently. "Monk must have been walking toward the bow when he fell."
The fuzzy picture in Pitt's mind began to clear, and he saw the piece of the puzzle that didn't belong. The alternator housing is on the starboard side, so it should have been Monk's right temple that was smashed, not his left.
"You got it."
"What caused the TV camera to malfunction?"
"No malfunction. Somebody hung a towel over the lens."
"And the crew? Where was each member positioned?"
"I was working the nozzle while Sam Merker acted as pilot. Monk had left the instrument panel to go to the head, which is located in the stern. We were the second watch. The first watch included Jack Donovan, a young blonde fellow, the structural engineer from Oceanic Tech."
"Right.
And Lieutenant Leon Lucas, the salvage technician on assignment from the Navy, and Ben Drummer. All three men were asleep in their bunks."
"It doesn't necessarily follow that any one of them killed Monk," Pitt said. "What was the reasoning? You don't just kill someone in an unescapable situation 12,000 feet under the sea without one hell of a motive."
Woodson shrugged. "You'll have to call in Sherlock Holmes. I only know what I saw."
Pitt continued to probe. "Monk could have twisted as he fell."
"Not unless he had a rubber neck that could turn 180 degrees backward."
"Let's try another puzzler. How do you kill a 200-pound man by knocking his head against a metal corner that's only 6 inches off the floor? Swing him by the heels like a sledgehammer? Woodson threw out his hands in a helpless gesture. Okay, so maybe I got carried away and began seeing homicidal maniacs where none exist. God knows that wreck down there gets to you after a while. It's weird. There are times I could have sworn I even saw people walk in the decks, leaning over the rails and staring at us. He yawned, and it was evident that he was fighting to keep his eyes open. Pitt made for the door and then turned. You better get some sleep. We'll go over this later. Woodson needed no further urging. He was peacefully gone to the world before Pitt was halfway to the sick bay. Dr. Cornelius Bailey was an elephant of a man, broad shoulders, and had a thrusting, square-jawed face. His sandy hair was down to his collar, and the beard on the great jaw was cut in an elegant Van Dyke. He was popular among the salvage crews, and could outdrink any five of them when he felt in the mood to prove it. His hem-like hands turned Henry Monk's body over on the examining table, as effortlessly as if it was a stick doll, which indeed it very nearly was, considering the advanced stage of rigor mortis. "Poor Henry," he said. "Thank God he wasn't a family man. Healthy specimen. All I could do for him on his last examination was clean out a little wax from his ears." "What can you tell me about the cause of death?" Pitt asked. "That's obvious," Bailey said. "First, it was due to massive damage of the temporal lobe."
"What do you mean by first?"
"Just that, my dear Pitt. This man was more or less killed twice. Look at this." He pulled back Monk's shirt, exposing the nape of the neck. There was a large purplish bruise at the base of the skull. "The spinal cord just below the medulla oblongata has been crushed, most likely by a blunt instrument of some kind." "Then Woodson was right. Monk was murdered."
"Murdered, you say?"
"Oh, yes, of course. No doubt of it," Bailey said calmly, as though homicide were an everyday shipboard occurrence.
"Then it would seem the killer struck Monk from behind and then rammed his head against the alternator housing to make it look like an accident."
"That's a fair assumption." Pitt laid a hand on Bailey's shoulder.
"I'd appreciate it if you kept your discovery quiet for a while, Doc."
"Mum's the word. My lips are sealed and all that crap. Don't waste another thought on it. My report and testimony will be here when you need it." Pitt smiled at the doctor and left the sick bay. He made his way aft to where the Sappho II sat dripping salt water on the stern ramp, climbed up the hatch ladder, and dropped down inside. An instrument technician was checking the TV camera.
"How does it look?" Pitt asked.
"Nothing wrong with this baby," the technician replied. "As soon as the structural crew checks out the hull, you can send her back down."
"The sooner the better," Pitt said.
He moved past the technician to the after end of the submersible. The gore from Monk's injuries had already been cleaned from the deck and the corner of the alternator housing.
Pitt's mind was whirling. Only one thought broke away and uncoiled. Not a thought, really. Rather an unreasoning certainty that something would point an accusing finger toward Monk's murderer. He figured it would take him an hour or more. But the fates were kind. He found what he knew he must find within the first 10 minutes.